This is the Agribusiness Report. A couple of guests today. One, Senator from Mississippi, Cindy Hyde-Smith, and from Colorado, Michael Bennett, both on the Senate Ag Committee. We'll talk with them in just a few moments. First off, let's hear from Seth Meyer. Dr. Meyer is chief economist at USDA and explains how the stronger dollar affects U.S. ag exports and imports.
Dollar strength is a part of the story just in general. It's just a general influence on limiting exports. I think global GDP growth is definitely part of the story in uncertainty in cotton prices. And then the other side of that is that record large import demand is certainly a part of dollar strength, right? I mean, when you look at it that way, you've got products, import products, having a relatively better competitive advantage given the strength in the U.S. dollar.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're in Washington, D.C., and ran into the Honorable Cindy Hyde-Smith. She represents the great state of Mississippi. So good to see you.
Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you for having me.
When you come back to D.C. and you're telling somebody what the conditions are back home, how would you describe them?
Well, right now, the Mississippi River is extremely low, and that has issues with getting our grains, our barges, you know, down the river. It's lower than it's probably been in my lifetime. That, you know, it's extremely low. So that's one of the issues we're dealing with. And the topic that everybody's talking about is input cost. You know, that is the real struggle. And when diesel costs what it does, and then you compound that with a shortage of diesel, it gets serious. It gets, you know, significant in our state like every other state. But that's definitely the conversation we're having because everybody's trying to get their ryegrass planted. Luckily, we've got ours planted. But just the costs that are associated with that and fertilizer cost through the roof. And, you know, there's so many reasons that it's like that. And we know pretty much know what those are. But it's a difficult time with input cost right now.
Input costs not really something that we necessarily tie into the farm bill. I know there are some margin programs on the dairy side. But as you look at the farm bill and what you're hearing from folks back home, what are some of the priorities you have?
Well, you know, the things that are important to them is like price loss coverage, those things, crop insurance, that in the programs that are beneficial, the programs that are working. But, you know, I think that we have to take time to look at all the programs, the ones that maybe aren't working that well, why they're not. Are there some that we need to get rid of? Are there some that we need to enhance? And I just think we need to strengthen a lot of the good programs because it's really crucial that USDA has the opportunity to be very functional right now and to sit down with them and look at things very closely because, you know, we're just in the process of starting the farm bill. This is our opportunity to really do things strategically. And, you know, we don't have to be in a real big rush right now. We've had, you know, a rural development meeting. But there's so many aspects that I think that it's our responsibility to make sure we're looking at the ones that are working and also the ones that aren't working or that need to be improved and how that can happen.
The farm bill, interestingly, as I think as one of your neighbors from Alabama said, it's obviously it includes things for farmers, but there's so much more there. You mentioned the first hearing, rural development. Are there some challenges that you're seeing in rural areas of Mississippi that need to be addressed either by USDA or in this farm bill?
Absolutely. You know, we talk about commodities, we talk about, you know, cattle and all of those things. But in the rural development, which is included in the farm bill, we have so many hospitals, rural hospitals, that they're just on the brink of closing. And, you know, there's a lot of things in there that USDA can provide access to financing that it's very important right now because of what we are facing in many of our rural hospitals in Mississippi. You know, you think about rural areas and you know, you have all these great producers out there that are growing crops, but you live in a community that has to be enhanced, that you can continue to stay there and be a producer. And the rural hospitals are actually, that's one of them when you're raising your family out there on the farm. But it is some serious issues going on right now that have me greatly concerned.
Have we found that you can't just throw money at a problem? You've got to really dig in and find some solutions?
You've got to have real solutions. And with the sophisticated equipment right now, you know, that we've had the opportunity, the great opportunity to take advantage of, you do have to have access to internet. You know, it's just our other infrastructure issue that is a must. It's like water, electricity. Now you have to have infrastructure of broadband and to just operate so much of the equipment. But when you're looking at a global market and we're trying to, you know, increase our global markets, it's a necessity. It's just great that we have money going toward that. But as you just said, you've got to do it correctly, that it actually works and the money is well spent, that we don't have to go back next year and change things. And that's a tall task. But I think that, you know, we're getting there, but it's going to have to be careful steps because we have to have it. You know, it's not only with the equipment, the kids that are at home doing their homework. That's part of our life right now. Post-COVID, we learned so many things there. So there have been a lot of advances that have taken advantage of broadband, but as we said, it's got to be done correctly.
So good to see you. Thank you so much for your time. I know this is really one of the busiest times of a congressional session the last couple of weeks or so we wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Again, it's the Honorable Cindy Hyde-Smith representing the great state of Mississippi. She's a member of the Senate Ag Committee and joins us from Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Farming season is coming to a close, and you and your equipment have been running hard. It's time to slow down with some much-needed maintenance. At Livingston Machinery, we can get your machines back to performance-ready with the annual winter service special going on now. For a limited time, get 15% off AGCO parts, 10% off service, and 180 days no interest, no payments when you use your AGCO Plus account. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by the Honorable Senator from Colorado, Michael Bennett. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony.
Okay, well, we're back in D.C. trying to wrap things up for this Congress, getting ready for the next Congress, but I know Farm Bill has been on your mind.
We've had 26 listening sessions around the state of Colorado. We're just getting started. That's how we begin every farm bill, is by going out and listening to what farmers and ranchers have to say in Colorado. I'd say if I had to summarize those meetings, this time costs are a huge issue for people. Drought is a huge issue. I mean, we're in a 1,200-year drought in the American West, and labor, and people just finding having to sell their equipment because they actually can't hire people to do the work they need them to do.
You mentioned the listening sessions. How vital is that for you as you sit down right across from here in the hearing room?
I think it's critically important. You know, the Agriculture Committee is an interesting committee because it's not a partisan committee. I mean, we have Republicans and Democrats on it, but it's not, they're not partisan divides. What they sometimes are regional divides. And in the context of the drought that we're facing, I think the voice of the Western farmer and rancher really needs to be part of this discussion. And the way to get that voice is to start with the listening session so that I can report to my colleagues here that, you know, this isn't just an issue, for example, about water quality anymore. It's water quantity is a massive issue for us in the Rocky Mountain West and in the Colorado River Basin. And the credibility of those kind of arguments then lead to things like the creation of the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, for example, as a result of voices that I heard out there, you know, the credibility comes from the ground. It comes from the farmers and ranchers that are just trying to, you know, put themselves in a position to be able to leave something to their kids and to their grandkids.
And obviously that Western drought didn't happen overnight, so we can't solve it overnight, but are there some paths forward?
I think there are. You know, we were able to get in the infrastructure bill last year $8 billion for Western water. We were able to get $10 billion for our forests. You know, we have not invested in our forests. They've been decimated by climate change and by beetle kill and other things. And that's where our watersheds begin in the West, are in those national forests. So that $10 billion is going to be enormously important. At the end of the session last year, we got $4 billion for the Colorado River Basin that's going to put us in the position, I hope, to be able to demonstrate how we can do some water saving along the Colorado River. This can't fall just on agriculture. It has to be, you know, everybody that's going to take responsibility. But in the longer term, what we need is for the upper basin and the lower basin, the Colorado, those different states, to forge a consensus about what we're going to do to go forward. And then the federal government, and I'm already working with some Democratic and Republican colleagues on this, the federal government is going to have to figure out how to backstop that agreement. We're going to need resources from the federal government to do that, and it's appropriate because we're talking about the future of the entire American West. And we need to have a vision for what this is going to look like a century from now. And that's the work that's really just beginning.
You mentioned bipartisan work and working with other states. That really brings me to something I know you've been passionate about, and that's the Workforce Modernization Act. What's the latest on that?
The latest is that I've continued to work with a Republican colleague from Idaho, Mike Crapo, to see if we can get something over the finish line. The House passed a bill. We've had a negotiation that's changed the bill in some ways that I think are in some ways better for workers, in some ways better for producers. But we have to get to an agreement, Tony, because if we don't, the labor shortage in farm country is going to be devastating to American agriculture. And we're going to begin losing it. You know, it's going to begin to move to Mexico, to migrate to Mexico. We've seen that with, you know, tree nurseries in California. I'm deeply worried about the future of the dairy industry. So I am hoping that in this lame duck session that we're in, that we can actually make it a little bit less lame by passing the Farm Work Modernization Act. That would be a big step forward.
So good to see you. I know this is a busy time, as you've got a lot of work to cram into just a few short hours, so
well,
best of luck.
I appreciate it, Tony. It's great to see you, and you know, I really hope, I believe that this committee is going to do a really good job on the Farm Bill this year.
Again, it's the Honorable Michael Bennett, represents Colorado, member of the Senate Ag Committee. From Washington, D.C., I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Well, while Brazil hit successive records in grain production, farmers there facing an old problem, deficit in grain storage. Brazilian government projecting output at 313 million tons of grains. That would be a new record, 15% higher than last season, which was a record. But no storage.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
When it comes to farming and dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Gary Crawford reports.
Yes, the overall condition of the nation's winter wheat crop nationally is still down at 30-year lows.
But the good news is a few production areas have received much-needed moisture in recent weeks, and that has started to turn the condition around a little bit.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey, it's due to
snow in the north and some rain in the south.
So nationally, when crop watchers went out this last week to check on the wheat crop,
34% of the winter wheat rated good to excellent. That is up from last week's 32%. And even more impressively, just 26% of the crop now rated very poor to poor. That's a big improvement from last week's 33%.
Some remarkable improvements in several states. For example, Montana 3 weeks ago, 24% of that state's winter wheat crop was rated poor to very poor. This week,
that number has improved to 11%.
USDA reports improvements in Texas and Oklahoma as well, but worsening condition ratings in Kansas and Nebraska.